Danny Mac, the call yesterday, he was in the booth with Brad Thompson on FS Midwest, and the operative phrase there was, hold on, because I was afeard.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. I had a little bit of that going as well. A game that looked like it was going to be in hand. You get a 5-spot off Zach Greinke. You think, all right, we're good to go. It got a little bit tighter than you wanted. Didn't necessarily have to use Carlos Martinez. You did. But at the end of the day, you come away with a series victory.
You know, it's one of those times where normally I get the old tight sphincter when something like that starts to happen. I was fine.
You were the whole time.
I was confident.
I don't know.
I don't know why. I had no reason to feel that way. That's just how I felt.
You've given up.
It's apathy. You can't give up now.
Maybe it is.
The All-Star break just happened. You figured it out. Don't do that. Talk about random feelings. When the Cardinals scored 5 runs, my feeling was like, holy crap, look at all those runs.
Looks
like, that's
fun.
So many runs. Even when they scored 4 the other day, I'm like, oh, that is so many. Look at them. The average in baseball is way above that. Like, teams score a lot of runs, but that just feels like a lot right now. The starting pitching was great, in those couple of games. And, look, they need to build on stuff. They need Goldschmidt to keep doing Goldschmidt stuff. Great to see him hit the bomb. Tyler O'Neill with the big day on Saturday. They need heroes, man.
How great has Adam Wainwright been? You look at his last 8 starts. Yesterday, 7 shutout innings. The start before that, 5 innings, 2 earned runs. 6 2/3 on the 26th of June. He allowed 2 earned runs to Oakland. 5 1/3 with 3 earned runs against Miami. At Chicago, that was the one where he stumbled. 4 1/3, he allowed 3 runs. But then 8 shutout innings in his start before that against the Cubs here. At Philadelphia, he goes 6 and allows 4. He has been really good for the Cardinals this year.
He's been a lot better than just the nominal 5th starter. Like, he's been great. He's been able to eat up a lot of innings for you and done so quality. It's great to see that. And you know how competitive Waino is when he's out there. I mean, he honestly expects every single game. And I don't think that this is the same with all starters nowadays, especially younger guys. He expects to go 9 innings. Like, he expects at the end of the game that he's going to be the one there shaking hands with the catcher. Now, it's not going to happen all the time, but I love that mindset. He gets pissed off when he gets taken out of the ball game, and he works and he battles to stay in there. Did another great job yesterday.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be a point for every player where you're just not physically capable of doing it the way you want to do it any longer. And, you know, he's approaching that right now. I think we all understand that. But there should never be any doubt as to whether or not he's going to put as much effort as he possibly can into staying out there and trying to be as effective as possible. Doesn't mean it's always going to happen for him, but I would never question his effort.
No, he is definitely out there. He's working his tail off. Guys, it was a good weekend, right? Didn't start out great on Friday. Saturday, Sunday, they rattle off 2 wins in a row. And a lot of moments you can look at. You can look at Ponce filling in. He gets a call around noon on Friday. And I know they lost that game, but his first thought it was... Am I getting sent down? Am I getting sent down again? He's like, no, you're starting. And he goes out and deals. I thought that Dakota Hudson did a great job of bouncing back. We mentioned Waino already. My favorite moment of the entire weekend, though, was when Make-A-Wish had a young kid there. Preston Dobbs is his name. He got to meet all his favorite players. He got to come up into the booth with us. He called a half an inning on there, and he called a Matt Carpenter base hit. And it was Matt Carpenter, base hit. Finally.
Struck out 3 times in a row.
It was unbelievable. Yes. And Tyler O'Neill, apparently before the game, had told him he was going to try to hit a home run for him. O'Neill does so. Pretty cool day at the ballpark and a nice reminder that maybe baseball is more important than just 9 innings and a win or a loss sometimes.
And a great job by you guys, Danny Mac and the FS Midwest crew, to get the ball for Preston and that Iowa family. They couldn't have been sweeter.
Hit the best family ever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, we don't want anything.
That was cool. Yesterday morning, I'm up and flipping around, and I'm planning on going for a bike ride, maybe hitting some golf balls. So I sit down, and I say, you know what, I'll just watch this Wimbledon final, and it'll be over, then I'll go hit some golf balls.
9 hours later.
And that's it. On a massive miss hit, Wimbledon number 5 for the Serbian superstar. What a treat this has been.
Yeah, 5 hours later, no bike ride, no golf balls.
Yeah, but you get to watch an epic finals.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. You got your heart rate up. That's all that matters.
Yeah. And how about Federer? He's at 8-7, 40 love, with a chance to put it away with two championship points. And he's serving, and he can't do it. And Djokovic comes back, wins that game, ties it at 8-8. And then they go into that crazy new tiebreaker where the first person to 7 points wins after you're 12-12. And Djokovic is the first to 7, and he wins it.
Kind of crazy. It's crazy that something can last that long. Like the endurance that you have to have. Those guys are running all over the place. Freak athletes. And just recently, I spent more time watching a little bit of tennis. I think I'm getting old, gentlemen, because I sit down and watch stuff that I normally wouldn't watch. I'll watch tennis. Hell, I watched soccer recently. I've been watching a little bit of golf. I don't know what's happened to me, but I'm kind of digging it.
You know, I am really not into watching golf broadcasts. Not really. I know, Randy, you probably like doing it. I never have gotten into it. But there are a lot of people who believe that is the best television sport, the way they package the product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the sounds and the sights and everything and the way they're able to make it look like it's head-to-head, even though it's not. You know, you've got one guy who's on one hole and then 7 holes up, there's a different guy and they have no idea what each other is doing. But the way they package the product is really good.
This weekend gave us another example of why sports provides moments that if you took the script to a Hollywood writer, they'd say, oh, this is too corny. That was on Friday night, the first home game for the Angels after the death of Tyler Skaggs. All of the Angels players were wearing Skaggs number 45, and they wind up with a combined no-hitter. And then, and by the way, Skaggs' mom had thrown out the first pitch and threw a strike from the top of the mound, from the rubber. And then afterwards, they all take their 45 jerseys out to the mound, and they adorn the mound with Tyler Skaggs number 45s all over the place.
It was, to me, that was one of the, obviously it's tragic. I mean, the entire event and losing a young man. That event, though, of the combined no-hitter, the spectacle of the entire thing was so incredible, so amazing, and so perfect. And in moments like that, it's hard to believe that there's not something else going on, that there's not somebody upstairs, that there's not somebody pulling the strings, because that was really special. And to see everybody take off their jerseys and lay them on the mound, man, that just such an emotional moment.
I usually am not really into all that much a no-hitter that's thrown by more than one person, right? I think when a single pitcher does it, that's an exciting event to me. It's not that exciting when they go and get a guy after the seventh inning and they bring in a reliever and they combine for it. But there was just something perfect to me about it being a whole team thing. You know, there was some really good defense in the game, which a lot of times there is in a no-hitter. But you had that. You had multiple pitchers and, you know, different roles coming in to seal that thing. I just don't think it could have been any better. And there were a lot of really neat numbers that went along with it. I think one of them was that the last combined no-hitter in California happened on the day he was born.
And
the exact day he was born.
They scored 7 in the first and 13 overall, and his birthday was July 13th.
Yes.
7-13, so pretty amazing. And by the way, I think this might be the first opener no-hitter. Because Taylor Cole started, he only went 2 innings, and then Pena took over and fired the last 7. I think this might be the first in the opener era where you have a defined guy to be an opener. I think this is the first no-hitter when you've had one.
Man, well, it was unreal. And you could just kind of tell as you're watching it, because they kept, you know, panning into it, letting you know what's going on. You knew it was going to happen.
Right.
And I like seeing no-hitters anyhow. But as I was watching it, I'm like, oh, this has to happen. Yeah. Like, please don't screw this one up. Usually I don't care that much when one gets blown up. It wasn't the case in this one.
And by the way, Albert didn't play in that game. If people weren't aware of it over the weekend, he was a non-participant as they put up all those runs.
And by the way, Mike Trout hit his home run that he hit, that first one, 454 feet. Skaggs number 45, so 454 on that one. And here it is, Orioles, A's, in Oakland on July 13th, 1991. There was a combined no-hitter. That was the exact day Tyler Skaggs was born.
That's amazing.
There's a lot of really interesting stuff like that. And that's why what BT said about it, it can't always be a coincidence, can it?
Oh.
I mean, maybe. But it feels like it's not.
No, if you have any belief at all, even a 1% belief in a higher power, you have to look at a situation like that and say, okay, that's that higher power at work.
Yeah, there it is.
Those are your sounds of the weekend on 101 ESPN. Coming up, the Cardinals are off on the right foot to begin the second half. Will it continue, though? That's next on 101 ESPN. You heard the call from FS Midwest. You heard from the Cardinals skipper, Mike Schilt. And the Cardinals take 2 of 3 against Arizona. And we said it last week, guys, heading out of the break, that the Cardinals essentially need to win 2 out of every 3 if they're going to be a legitimate playoff contender at the end of the season. That's what happens when you are 44-44 at the break. Well, you won 2 of your first 3. Now you just got to keep doing it.
Yeah, that's easy, right?
Yeah.
And still, they've done it without the crazy offensive onslaught. I know that they scored 5 runs in the game yesterday against Zach Greinke, which, by the way, is no small feat. I mean, he's great. They were able to do a lot against him. But you're not winning just because the offense is on fire. You're still waiting for these guys to get going. The starting pitching in that series was really, really good. Daniel Ponce de Leon was great. Dakota Hudson looked like he might be in for a rocky one on Saturday, and then he was able to bounce back and get you through 6.
Michael Wacha up in the pen with the bases loaded and nobody out in the second.
Yep. Yeah, you thought it was going to get really rocky, and he was able to lock it down and do a good job there. The offense came alive. Tyler O'Neill came alive in that game, drove in all 4. But you still need to figure out more and more ways to score runs. And I was so excited yesterday, and it's such a random thing, but home runs are great. I love them, and I would love the Cardinals to hit more and more of them. I liked in the 4th inning when Harrison Bader led off with a double. Then Adam Wainwright followed him with a sacrifice bunt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matt Carpenter on the first pitch got a fastball up in the zone and hit it to center field and manufactured a run. That's what's up. That's what you need to do more of.
Well, you probably need to try. I don't really love giving up the outs, but you probably need to try different ways to score if it's not working for you otherwise. And this team has just not been able to do it consistently. I love the idea of manufacturing a run. I love being able to go first to third, especially for a team that's pretty good at running the bases. Would like to give them an opportunity to run the bases. And that means get somebody on base, drive him in, move him to third on a single or on a double or whatever, try to score him from first. Utilize the speed they have. But they just haven't been able to put enough balls in play. In addition to that, though, I do think the power is going to have to come. They just haven't been good enough at that. And if you look at what they've done in terms of all the teams in the National League, they're not where they need to be as far as hitting the home run. They're not where they need to be with the extra base hits either. So it is good to see some of that over the weekend. It just has to continue from now on.
And you look at Goldie's last 2 series, it looks to be coming around for him. Matt Carpenter is a different story altogether. I was beside myself on Saturday when the Diamondbacks put all 4 infielders either behind second base or on the right side of second base, and he either, well, he struck out 3 times.
It was change-ups away off the plate.
Actually, those are bunt doubles.
There were a couple of pitches, and with 2 strikes, I get being a little bit leery of trying to drop down the bunt. But
right.
He had a couple pitches away that all you had to do was just kind of stick the bat out there and then play a little bit of pepper, and you got yourself a single or a double.
What if they do Atlantic League rules? Oh, they have a couple of shots at it.
The first
I didn't see
the
it.
The first one happened.
Oh, the guy stealing first.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah, that worked out pretty well. I don't know if I like it.
I don't know if I hate it. I'm right there kind of with you. I don't know if I like it. Don't know if I hate it. I'm in the middle.
I mentioned this on the broadcast because we were talking about this yesterday. I said it's kind of like that like ugly shirt where it's like, looks good on you, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I'll watch it from afar. I'm interested.
I don't know. See, the one thing I do like about it is the thing that people have brought up a lot, and that is you're not going to see pitchers on 0-2 waste a lot of those breaking balls in the dirt. They're going to try to throw strikes, which might create more offense. So I kind of like the idea of that.
I don't want any more.
But also,
offense.
I think it was John Baker, who the catcher, who had tweeted that it's going to be hell. Like that, those moments are going to be absolute hell for catchers moving forward.
Just panic all the time.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Now, you had some really good things that happened. Obviously, Goldie moving up to third in the batting order. He had hit 4th in the first couple of games. You had Tyler O'Neill, and Tyler O'Neill is going to have to prove himself here. This is an opportunity, and Jim the Cat Hayes pointed out yesterday that we're still not sure when Marcell Ozuna is coming back. At some point, Tyler O'Neill's going to have to take advantage of one of these opportunities to show the Cardinals that he can be their left fielder next year.
Yeah, and I think that he was doing a little bit of that over the weekend. It was great to see his first at-bat. It was the RBI double down the line, gets in on his hands. This is on Saturday, and drops it in. Then the two-run home run to right field. Love seeing him go that way with a fastball up in the zone. You know what Tyler O'Neill is to a certain extent. I mean, he's going to be a lot of boom or bust. He's going to hit long home runs, and he'll probably strike out quite a bit. Also, I think he's got to get better in the field. He's got to be more consistent out there. But you're right. It goes back to having an opportunity. Is this club going to be better when Marcell Ozuna is back? Yes. Yeah. But in the meantime, until he is, somebody needs to pick up the slack. And I think that Tyler O'Neill so far, the last couple of days at least, has done a good job.
You're just kind of hoping to tread water right now while Ozuna is out. But none of this happens without Paul Goldschmidt being himself.
Right.
And he is the main key to this entire operation. If that dude does not produce the way he usually produces, then I just don't see the offense going anywhere. Whatever we get out of O'Neill in the meantime, that's going to be gravy, at least to me. So, like I said, I'm hoping they just sort of are able to skate by here for a while until that guy returns. But, man, Paul Goldschmidt has got to be a huge part, and he was this weekend.
Three homers in his last seven games for Goldie. One other note about this team. Are you guys concerned, because I am, about the possibility of many of the guys in this bullpen being gassed? Miller is touch and go. Most of the time he's touch.
Miller.
I'm comfortable with him coming into games. The guys I'm concerned about are Brebby and Gant.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what to expect from those guys right now.
Yeah, you know what? I do think that is going to be a big key down the stretch. And the starting pitching recently has been a lot better in getting you deeper and deeper into ball games. But and that's one of the main reasons why I still believe that adding a starter at the trade deadline would be a good idea to alleviate some of that off of the pen. And maybe it shifts another arm down to the pen to give you a little bit more help down there. But yeah, I mean, I feel like both of those guys, Brebbia here, we saw him come back from the paternity list and he was like lights out. He was great. But we've seen him make some more mistakes up in the zone and just not being able to consistently hit his spots. And to me, whether, you know, he feels this or not, I feel like it's probably a little bit of that dead arm fatigue, you know, in the middle of the season when you work a lot.
Yep.
And John Gant has worked a ton. So if you could take a little bit off of their plate, it would be great. I do believe that everybody down in the pen right now, Mike Shildt has a good feel for. He doesn't have that guy right now where he comes into the game, I don't think, and you're like, oh, man, I don't know. I think the closest thing they had to that was Webb, and Webb went through some struggles. Now Chase and Shreve is up. He's got some good options. You'd like to be able to take some off of Gant and Brebbia.
You need to, because, look, I've told you guys both, I'm not really all that confident about the Cardinals' chances here for the next couple of months. They could go on a run, and I'm hoping it happens. It'll be a lot of fun if they're playing some meaningful games deep in September. This is just where my confidence level is. But if they're going to do it, if they're going to have that, you know, final 2 weeks of the season matter, they have to alleviate some of the pressure and some of the workload from the bullpen. Right now, they are fourth in the league in the amount of innings their relievers have thrown. So you want to be able to get your starters to go deeper into games. That's going to pay off big, because they will run out of gas. By the time you get to the last 2-3 weeks of the season, if you are relying on them as much as you're having to so far, that's going to be a problem. The Brewers, by the way, do you know how many innings they have had thrown by their relief corps so far this season? Now, keep in mind, the Cardinals have 315 innings out of their relievers, and that has, again, put them at fourth in the league.
425.
Brewers are at 381.
Oh. That's just high.
They have thrown a ton of innings. That is 70, almost 70 innings, 65 innings more than the Cardinals have thrown with their relief corps. That is crazy. So if you talk about a team that needs starting pitching help, that's one right there.
And their recent bullpen ERA is horrific.
Yeah.
In the last, right before the break and then since the break, it has been really bad.
It's bad overall.
Yeah.
It's as a bullpen, 463 for the ER.
Which is amazing for a group as talented as they are.
Yep.
They should be better than that.
Yeah, but it goes back to what we always talk about with bullpens, the fluctuation.
That happens.
You have a great year, you get used a ton. Next year, they had a couple of guys, Jeffress and Hader, got used all the time.
Yeah.
Wears you out a little bit.
Right.
Yep. And they don't have Knebel. By the way, they are reportedly one of the teams that is a favorite to land Will Smith from the Giants. Of course, the Giants got him from Milwaukee a few years ago. Coming up, we're going to take a look at our hot topics, the rain, and we'll check the forecast here. But the rain should clear out by game time tonight as the Cardinals open a three-game series with the Pirates at the ballpark. That's next on 101 ESPN. All right, I'm checking out the KMOV.com Doppler weather because our friend Steve Templeton guarantees that his weather is going to be right on the mark. If the guarantee doesn't come true, I think you get a free umbrella out of it or something
like that. Is
that
a thing?
That's no way.
They must have a ton of umbrellas.
No, because he's always right.
He knows what he's doing.
Well, I know he does.
I guess.
But I think that oftentimes, you know, weather can shift. And once you put something out on the interwebs, that's umbrellas time.
What? I think you have to register for it or something like that.
Guys, I think it might get heavier around 7.
You think? Yeah. Because it looks to me like it's coming up from the south. And it looks like it right now. It's clearing out.
Does it?
It's going from, this is that Hurricane Barry group of storms. Hurricane Barry. that hit Louisiana over the course of the weekend. And we're getting that storm now. And right now, the brunt of it has apparently, at least according to forewarned Sky Tracker Doppler, cleared St. Louis. And it looks like by game time, we'll be in pretty good shape. Oh. As the Cardinals will try to open a three-game series with the Pirates. I will tell you something because I try to work ahead here.
Yeah. Right.
This is a three-game series. Cardinals are playing 17 days in a row, right, BT?
Yeah, that's correct.
The Cardinals will welcome the Pirates back to town on August 9th, 10th, and 11th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the Cardinals and Pirates are both off on the 8th, so they can set up their pitching for a day-night doubleheader on the 10th, a Saturday, where they already have a night game scheduled and just play a day-nighter on that on Saturday the
10th.
I thought you said
the rain's going to let up. Is it?
No, but if something untoward would occur.
So
you're leaving yourself an out.
What does our guy say?
Come on.
All right, thanks, Ollie. Yeah, it's going to rain, so now we know. But thanks for working ahead. That actually helps out.
Just trying to do that. And the Cardinals will play the Pirates tonight, and they will send Miles Michaelis to the hill. The veteran right-hander will be opposed by Joe Musgrove. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, Michaelis and Musgrove. 7:15 with the start at the ballpark, and here is your Redbird lineup. Marp is leading off, DeJong hitting second, Goldie hitting third, O'Neill, Fowler, and Wonger. Weeder's behind the plate, Bader back in center, and Michaelis on the mound. And for the Buccos, it's Frazier, Reynolds, Marte, Bell, who's unbelievable, worth the price of admission this year.
He's a monster.
Bell, Moran, and Dickerson in left, and then Newman at shortstop, Stallings behind the plate, and Musgrove on the mound.
Hey, speaking of Newman, did you hear the Moyle in the one Seinfeld episode? They found his body.
No.
Was he all right? No, he apparently he's not. He is.
Was he all right?
Yeah, he was missing. And they think they found him in some remote wooded area, I think in Oregon.
Why don't people look in remote wooded areas
first? That's the only place to look. And his dog was dead in the car.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Is it bad that I'm more sad about animals dying than people often?
I feel the same way.
Like even animals that I don't know at all.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
I get sad when I drive home and see him on the side of the road, too.
What if it's
sleeping.
A cat?
No, yeah, still sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to tell you that when I go out for bike rides in remote areas sometimes, I look at those remote areas and say, that'd be a good place to hide a body.
I do the same thing, Randy. I don't know if that means that I'm going to kill somebody at some point, but I'm like, oh, for sure. For sure you could hide one right there and not get caught.
Well,
who's going to go there?
I'm going to tell you right now that I honest to God believe every single person on earth has the same thought.
That's good.
If you haven't had that thought.
I think your pastor is probably driving down the road going, man, I could probably hide a body over
totally.
There.
Totally.
I think anybody who is driving and sees wooded remote areas thinks, I bet people hide bodies there.
And here's the thing. If somebody did come across the body out there, chances are they were trying to hide their own body. They ain't going to tell on
true,
you.
That's true, right.
Well, what if you're just hiking?
Side-by-side bodies found in a remote area.
So would you be afraid to call police and say that, oh, look, I found a body out here? Oh, yeah, what were you doing out there?
Nothing. I like to hike.
Bottom of the seventh at Colorado. The Giants lead the Rockies 16-2. And it just fits. I was telling Anthony Stalter earlier in the crossover that the Giants would never win another World Series with Brandon Crawford at shortstop. He's 4-for-4 with 3 runs scored and 6 RBIs today. He's doing well.
They've scored an obscene amount of runs recently. It's like 90 runs in the last 6 games, I think.
They have a new-looking lineup. They have Carl Yastrzemski's grandson, and they have a youngster by the name of Dickerson, who is hitting the daylights out of the ball. At least recently he has been, Alex Dickerson. So whenever he gets a hit, his teammates in the dugout yell, "Dick, Dick, Dick," for Dickerson.
I like that.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to have a nickname, man. That one obviously makes sense.
Yeah. So hitting .311 with a .370 on base and a .608 slug. So
man, that's
he's
what
playing
Dickie
well.
Do.
And Yastrzemski he doesn't have the OPS that Dick does, but Yaz is performing well for him, too. They have churned their roster. I think they've used something like 50 players already this season, maybe more.
I feel like you just really wanted to say the D word.
Well, it's a guy's name,
it's a chant.
It's a chant for their team. It's a baseball
but
thing.
But be honest, you were really excited to tell us about it.
Oh, yeah, I was.
Yeah, I mean, we don't usually get down a Giants rabbit hole. But, no. But if, in fact, there's a good story at the end of it.
By the way, Herman Marquez, BT, 2 2/3 innings, 11 runs on 11 hits. He struck out 3 and didn't walk anybody. He allowed 11 runs on 11 hits, didn't walk anybody.
Hey, made him earn it.
Yeah.
You know, you always hate shooting yourself in the foot, walking some guys, and then they come around to score. Yep. I know a guy that gave up 11 runs in the first inning of a ball game.
But didn't only go one inning.
No, he went 6 and gave up 11 total. That guy's a champ.
That's turning it around right there.
Yeah, and then he retired.
After that game. Tinoco quieted things down, by the way, when he came in for the Rockies. He gave him 2 2/3 also. He allowed only 4 earned runs, 5 overall, and 6 hits. 16-2 Giants as they play in the bottom of the 7th. The Cardinals, by the way, are still doing well in the standings department. They're only a game out of that second wild card. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah, there's a ton of parity right now going on in the league, which works out great for the Cardinals right now. They still need – I think that there's a difference between being tight in the standings and believing you can win a championship. Mm-hmm. If the Cardinals start playing like they should play, if their guys start swinging it like they should swing it, they should believe that they have an opportunity to win. What we've seen in the first half, that's not good enough. Somebody's going to pull away. Hopefully what we've seen here recently in the last 2 days, maybe that's more true.
How worried are you? And I don't, maybe worried is not the right word. If you are a Brewers fan, how concerned are you about their chances? That's a pretty good team. But we talked about the relief problems they've had and the amount of innings the relievers have had to throw. If you were trying to project what they're going to do the next 2 months, what would you think?
I would be really concerned about their pitching. Their offense is fine,
yep.
Even though they've had issues, obviously, with some of their guys. Aguilar has not been good at all. Well, he's been better in his last few games, but they haven't been the offense they were last year. I'd be really concerned.
Yeah, their run differential is minus 24 now. They were up there earlier in the year, but that's dropped off considerably. Yep.
And one other note for you, it was announced on Saturday, Jordan Binnington gets a 2-year deal worth $8.8 million. We said here on the show, he's got to make more than Jake Allen, who's getting $4.35 a
just
year.
Just beat him.
So he's getting $4.4 a year, and he will bet on himself. He'll become an unrestricted free agent. JR has a great piece up at The Athletic about the negotiations for this Binnington contract, but he'll want to get into that Carey Price, Sergei Bobrovsky territory with 2 more great years for the Blues.
I feel like this really worked out well for both sides. I mean, you're first of all showing him your appreciation of what he did for you and what you think he's going to do over the next couple of years, but you didn't have to commit like 6 or 7 years at a crazy AAV to get that done. And it sounded like he just wanted to make sure he got 2 years and didn't do the 1 year thing and then have to go through this process again next year. And look, worst case scenario is, I think, he does really, really well and the Blues have to figure out how to sign him to an extension.
That doesn't sound like a bad scenario at all.
No, because if it doesn't work out, you know, you've already won a Stanley Cup, but then the contract is over in 2 years.
Yeah, his side of it was, show me you love me a little bit.
Right.
You know, show me that they did for 2 years, and it's great. And it had to be very difficult. I know JR goes into this in his piece at The Athletic, in there's not a comp for what he did. So no. So you're trying to come up, you're kind of shooting from the hip right here in an area where you go as long as you could possibly go. Mm-hmm. You win the last game, you win the cup, and everything else happens. I mean, this contract had to get going pretty quickly. I'm glad they knocked this thing out. I'm happy for Jordan Binnington.
And one soccer note, Carolyn Kendall Betts and Jim Kevin are in New York today at the MLS offices, making a pitch to MLS about MLS for the Lou, and hopefully we'll get some good news out of that meeting.
I mean, how can we not?
What else is there? Don't we just have to secure financing and stuff? That's the main thing? Because they've already said that they'd like to be here, right?
Where do they go if they expand to 30 and St. Louis isn't one of them? I mean, there will be places, but I don't know.
Well, but it sounds like it's all on this end, right?
It's all on this end.
Yeah, we got to get this going.
And I can't imagine that those two would go into a meeting like this without some certainty about what they could deliver for
you
MLS.
Mean, you don't think they showed up to New York and the people in MLS said, all right, what you got? And they go, I don't know. We'll be all right.
Well, hey, St. Louis interests have done that with the NFL before.
This is, I think this is a different situation. You got people who really care about
people
it.
People that get it.
Yeah.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. Coming up, one of the greatest pitchers and players of all time is dealing with pancreatic cancer now. We're going to break down what Bob Gibson has meant to the Cardinals next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And, of course, Cardinal manager Mike Schilt, the Cardinals, and Dan McLaughlin made the announcement that Bob Gibson, the Cardinals Hall of Famer and one of the great pitchers of all time, and we're going to talk about what a quality human being he is, but he is battling pancreatic cancer. And Jen Langosch tweeted the other night, cancer picked the wrong guy to fight here.
Very true. And everything that Mike Schilt said there, I'm sure that we and fans and everybody echoes. People are thinking about Bob and praying for him and knowing how tough he is. The thing about Bob Gibson is when you see him, you forget how old he is. Mm-hmm. He's like 83 years old, but he looks spry. He comes and Dan mentioned it on the broadcast the other day. He jumps out of the car on opening day and kind of like has like a pep in his step going up there. So to hear this news is kind of shocking, and we know this, and everybody knows, you know, I'm pretty sure pretty much everybody listening has been affected by cancer, you know, one way or the other. But, you know, Gibby is, he's tough as nails. He's got everybody in the world behind him. Certainly he's got the best medical care out there, but a sad moment currently, a sad state at least, for Cardinal fans and for Bob Gibson.
It's an incredibly tough disease as cancers go, and there's never really a cancer that's just completely simple, and you know, a lot of people recover from various forms of it, but this is a really difficult one. I hope that he is able to do it, but we know he's got a tough road ahead. I feel sort of unfortunate here because I mean, I'm with two people who have been around him in the past multiple ways. Randy, you working media, BT being a member of the Cardinals. Certainly both of you have some good memories and stories of him. I have not had the pleasure to personally interact with him.
We talked to Dan Dierdorf on Friday and talked about how I had the opportunity, the great good fortune to be Dan's first producer when he started doing Open Line. Around that same time, that summer, Bob Gibson started doing post-game Open Line on KMOX for Cardinal games. So we would hang out in the studio, and I got to watch baseball games with Bob Gibson, and then afterwards I would produce the show. I'll never forget a guy called in, and this is before analytics, and he said, yeah, I'm 28 years old, and I throw 95 miles an hour, and nobody threw 95 then. He said, I'm just wondering what I should do. And Gibby said, well, you know, you missed your chance. You're too old. So you just go out and get in some men's league, and you throw as hard as you can for as long as you can until your arm falls off and just enjoy it. But Bob being the Hall of Famer, and I was never aware until after I had known him for a while that he was as gruff with the media apparently as he was when he was a player. But when I started wanting to go to All-Star games, I went to Bob. I said, hey, can you help me out with tickets for the All-Star game? Took care of me every single time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
and just
cool.
So how cool is it that you're going to Oakland, California, and you're calling up Bob Gibson and saying, hey, can I come up and at his hotel? Can I come up and grab those tickets? Yeah. So, you know, just being friends with Bob Gibson. And Danny has developed an unbelievable relationship with Gibby. And Dan was on with Bernie this morning and talked about his relationship and having to make that announcement on Saturday. No doubt about it. BT, you've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with him, too.
He, to me, he was one of those guys always, and the Cardinals have a lot of these, and we've been very fortunate over the years. But in spring training, like, you see Bob Gibson, you're just like, oh, crap. Am I allowed to go up and talk to that guy? Like he is royalty. And Bob is a guy that he's not going to, like, seek you out to tell you stuff. Like, you have to ask, and you have to, like, want to get something. But I had the opportunity during many spring training games to just kind of sit on the bench and just chat with them and talk about baseball. And just I love watching how others, especially ridiculously talented other people, watch games and how they take it in, like mm-hmm. the comments that they make. And I don't know how many times he would talk about, oh, got to get in, got to throw that fastball in. Oh, but he mm-hmm. wanted to flip everybody from being, you know, 70-something years old when I was playing. But it was just so cool just to be around him, be around that presence.
And I want to make a point about what you said, because when he asked Mike Claiborne to leave Jack Flaherty his number and his contact information, Claib said to Flaherty, this just doesn't happen. Bob Gibson does not do this.
Yes.
And so that must say a lot about what Jack Flaherty can be, that Bob Gibson wanted to get in touch with him.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you get that phone number and you call right away mm-hmm. and just like, hey, I really appreciate it. I want to reach out. And there are times where maybe you see a little bit of yourself in somebody, and I'd have to believe that there's a little of that there that he saw in Jack Flaherty, something. It was the slider that they had in common, they talked about, and Jack asked about. But I think that there's more to it. If you have an opportunity to have a sounding board like Bob Gibson, man, you're on the horn quick.
Did you ever ask him specifically to show you how to throw something or how to do anything?
No, I was more intimidated by him. Just yeah. Kind of just talked. But no, honestly, I wish I would have. I wish I'd have picked up more stuff along the way, but I was kind of happy just being in the presence.
Yeah.
Is there a better line in baseball history than Tim McCarver going out to the mound to visit Bob Gibson and Gibson saying, get back behind the plate. The only thing you know about pitching is that you can't hit it.
That makes me really happy. That is good.
That is fantastic.
Classic. And, of course, some of the great moments in Cardinal history and in baseball history were given to us courtesy of Bob Gibson. Game one of the 1968 World Series against Detroit, a record that still stands. You only have to get 27 outs, 17 of them via the strikeout, you know, against a World Series team.
Pretty good, right? Pretty good.
Pretty amazing.
Just dominant.
And, of course, after that season, they lowered the mound in Major League Baseball because of his remarkable record 1.12 earned run average. And then on August 14th of 1971, against the Pirates in Pittsburgh. That tells you a little bit about how lucky you have to be to have a no-hitter. That Bob Gibson only had one. With all of those complete games and all those shutouts that he threw and all those low-hit games, that he only had one no-hitter?
Yeah. No, it really is crazy. And there are so many flukes that just happened mm-hmm. during a ball game. You'd think that he'd have more. I still can't get over how many complete games Bob Gibson threw. 255 complete games.
And 251 wins.
So this is the anniversary today of when he got his leg broken by Roberto Clemente, the off-the-line mm-hmm. drive. Came back 2 months later, then he pitched in the World Series, won three games.
Pretty tough.
That's from a broken fibula, I know that's not like an eight-week injury, is it? Isn't
no.
typically like way longer
yeah,
than
that? Yeah, way longer, especially then.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so he's incredible, and he's a tough guy, and our prayers and our thoughts are certainly with Bob Gibson, and we know that he's going to battle and compete just like he always has, and hopefully we'll see him next year on opening day. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and it's that time again. We've got a new fighter coming your way with the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN.